It's the Deseret News Rise and Shout podcast, episode 302. I am your host, Adam Mangum. In this episode, Matt and I talk about who the quarterback will be Friday night against UNLV. We talk about where the program is and where we think it should be headed. And then we also talk about men's basketball. What is the impact of Nick Emery's potential suspension? And also, how much will this team be relying on Yoeli Childs? Spoiler alert, a lot. This is the Deseret News Rise and Shout podcast. Get this show and other great podcasts at deseretnews.com/podcast. Follow us on Twitter at BYU_RiseShout. Hey, go to iTunes, subscribe, and maybe give us a review, and listen to us right now. Matt, you have run a marathon, and I have not.
Yes, I'm now a marathoner.
A marathoner. Are you going to put a sticker on your car that says 26.2? It's an inside thing. Some people don't get it.
I actually looked for a magnet to put on the back of the car, but I didn't see one that that worked for me. So I've not done it. I know you're like, well, it's just an oval with a number in the middle. Like, I don't understand what's hard about that.
Yeah, what is hard about that?
Well, there was I saw a lot of them with different like logos on them and things. And if I put one of those on, it's going to be pretty simple. But I'm likely going to do it. Yeah, I mean, it was a great trip.
New York City
was amazing.
Do you have one on your car that says 13.1?
No, I don't.
So you need both.
No, I wouldn't put the 13.1 on at this point.
Oh, no. Now you've grown past the half marathon.
Well, you can only put so many, you know, magnets on the back of your car. Okay. I got a BYU one back there, and
you got plenty of space, I'm sure. You know. Plenty of space. So I think your biggest news, besides the fact that you finished a marathon, right, is that you beat famous people.
I did.
I beat
one famous person.
Okay, what famous person did you beat?
So I beat Tiki Barber.
I've heard of him.
Did I beat somebody else famous? That was the one that I was excited about.
I don't know.
Kevin Hart beat me.
Kevin Hart. That doesn't make sense. His legs are shorter than yours.
Yeah, but he's in like really good shape now.
He looks like he's in good shape.
I lost to Jared Ward, obviously, of BYU fame, the former BYU runner, now a statistics professor. He came in. What did he place? His time was 2:18.
2:18. What's that pace? Like a 5.25 pace?
Hold on, let me go back to that page. Yeah, so his pace was 5:18.
Yeah, see, I was close. Good at math.
I think he finished something like ninth.
Wow. So.
I'm sorry. He came in fourth. Fourth of American men. Fourth in American men.
We only care about what happens in America.
I'd have to get to the full website to tell you where he came in.
Weird voices tonight already.
Yeah. Well, you know, sometimes we'll get into that.
Sometimes we do. We're talking weird voices.
Sometimes that's what we do. We get into, you know, we make some weird voices is all.
Are you now a high-pitched guy from Jersey?
Do you know what was fantastic?
What's that?
Jared Ward placed 12th, by the way. So you know what was fantastic was, so you go through all five boroughs on this marathon, and they line the streets with about 1 million people. And that's not an exaggeration. So for most of the course, except for the bridges where they don't allow any spectators, you got a row of people, sometimes two, or you know, and in the big areas, you know, it's 5-6 people deep, and they've got, in some places they've got bleachers set up and bands and all this. But so when we got into Brooklyn, you could hear everybody's cheering for and yelling at you. And I went by this one police officer that had like the, you know, if you watch Law and Order and there's a cop who's like working his beat in Brooklyn. Like, this is exactly what the guy sounded like. It was awesome.
That is pretty awesome.
And there was one police officer who, coming over that first bridge, this, you know, it's all quiet, it's just runners up there, and he's got his squad car about the top of the bridge. And he is playing Eye of the Tiger over his phone, but he's holding it up to his radio, so it's playing out the speakers on this car.
Nice.
It was pretty cool.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. So Matt, you ate in New York, I assume.
Oh, I did. I did eat in New York.
Did you guys do Little Italy? Where'd you guys go to eat?
So I stayed. I didn't want to do too much walking, and we were staying in Manhattan near Times Square. So
you know they have cabs and Ubers.
Well, I did use some Uber, but we stayed kind of in that area. So, you know, I meant to send you a picture of this. I'll have to send this one to you. But the night before the race, I usually eat pizza the night before a race. So we went to the pizza place in the Ed Sullivan Theater where The Late Show was filmed. Where Dave Letterman used to do all those gags in that pizza place.
Stop it.
I ate dinner in that restaurant Saturday night.
That's awesome.
It was awesome. And the pizza was excellent, by the way. It's Angelo's was the name of the place.
Yeah. He went and talked to Angelo all the time.
Oh, it was fantastic. And it was a ton of fun. Friday night we found a little Italian place off of Times Square that where to get some pasta.
Nice.
And I'm not ashamed to admit that when the race was over and I was just starving, I went to Five Guys. I'm just going to tell you that right now. Well, I know you're like, you were in New York City. You go to Five Guys. Yeah, I went to Five Guys. That's what I wanted. And you know what? I'm going to eat whatever I want at that point.
You just finished your marathon. You can eat whatever you want. There's no judgment here. And if there is, those people just need to keep it to themselves. Well, Matt, a sincere congratulations from myself and I'm sure from many of our listeners for completing the New York City Marathon. Quite an achievement to which I never plan on joining you. But still,
you let me know if you change your mind. All right, I'm here for you.
Sure, yeah. You just hold the phone on that one. All right, Matt, let's jump in to the CougarFan.com. Cougars in the news.
Cougars in the news.
Get all of your BYU sports news at CougarFan.com. Matt, women's volleyball beat Pacific and St. Mary's this past week, dropping only one set in the two matches. They finished the regular season in the Pacific Northwest this weekend, first at Gonzaga and then at Portland. Neither of those are teams they are likely to lose to. I believe combined against those two teams, there's something like 28-2 in all-time meetings. So I assume they will finish the year at 25-12 going into the 25-2 going into the postseason. They are ranked number 9 in all of the land. Unfortunately for women's soccer, it's a different story. They lost their last two matches, finished the season 7-8-4, 4-4-1 in West Coast Conference play. They will finish not in the postseason for the first time in 13 or 14 years. I believe the last time they didn't was also the same season the last time BYU did not go bowling, which of course is going to happen this year as well. So congrats on the women's soccer team for, unlike maybe what's happening with the men's football team, they did have some sparks of life in the middle of the season, but early stumbles and maybe some growth just wasn't enough to get there this year.
Yeah, the similarities actually between where the two programs ended up this year are interesting, right? The front-loaded schedule.
Yep.
There might have been a little bit more substance behind some of the hype with the women's soccer team, but it's the parallels are interesting.
Well, I mean, certainly they had a better season than the football did.
Oh, and that's definitely true.
Getting to the postseason's a little different, but still, you are correct, sir. Now, Matt, the only thing we're going to talk about the NFL this particular week is Jamal Williams scored his first NFL touchdown.
Yes.
On his only carry of the game. From 1 yard out. What I will say is this. I had thought that Aaron Jones, fellow rookie running back, he had had a couple of good games in a row and seemed to have solidified his place as the starter. He only finished the game with 4 carries, and he missed a block on a blitz that almost got a second. Could have gotten if Brett, thankfully Brett Hundley is a little mobile, could have had a second Packer quarterback out. I yelled at the television to Mike McCarthy, I know a running back on your roster who can do a better job picking up a blitz.
It will hit that, yeah.
Just saying, you might want to give Jay Swag Daddy a little opportunity there, Mike. Anyway, Matt, let's talk about men's basketball.
All right.
So they have their, we're recording this on Tuesday night, they have their final exhibition game on Wednesday night against Colorado College. We'll talk a little bit here in a minute about the Westminster scrimmage. And then, of course, they start this this Saturday night, have their regular season game opener against Mississippi Valley State, who's not good. So should be, you know, it'll count, but it'll still be a bit of a warm-up. So, Matt, let's jump in. We have our first tweet bag question.
Tweet bag. It was for dramatic effect. Did it work? That did pause? The anticipation get you?
Yeah, either that or did you fall asleep or something?
No, it was for dramatic effect.
Okay.
It was very dramatic.
Yeah, it was very dramatic. The listeners are filled with drama right now. You can, if you want to participate in the tweet bag, you got three ways to do it. Okay. The first way is, like Andre Hutchins did, on Facebook at facebook.com/riseandshout, Twitter at @BYU_riseshout, or old-fashioned email, riseandshoutpod@gmail.com. One word, riseandshoutpod@gmail.com. Matt, Andre...
And whichever avenue you choose, we do encourage you to climb on in the tweet bag.
No, we don't. Nobody encourages you to do that, except Matt. He's the climb only on person. In. Don't climb
Hashtag
in.
Climb on in.
It, do not climb on in any unfamiliar bags. That's a bad idea.
Actually, that is sound advice you just offered. But yes. The tweet bag isn't unfamiliar.
It is unfamiliar.
Climb on in, everybody.
Don't do it. Andre says, after BYU scrimmage against Westminster, what are your biggest concerns from that game? I think free throws might be a big worry. We'll get to free throws here in a second. I did not watch the game. Okay, so I'm just going off box score here. Here's what box score tells me. I have no worries. There we go. I'm done. Matt?
If there is a concern here, it is the free throws. But, you know, but it's Westminster.
But in their last game, they hit a bunch of their free throws. I mean, you look at the free throws, Zach Seljaas missed three, okay? He's not going to go 0 for 3. Most nights. He's a good shooter. Hawes was 1 for 3. Okay? He's not going to go 1 for 3 most nights. He's a better free throw shooter than that. Worthington was 1 for 3. He probably will have nights where he goes 1 for 3. Right? Those were your missed free throws for the most part. Elijah Bryant was 6 of 7. Hartnett was 3 of 4. Childs only shot one free throw. I'm not worried about the free throws. Because of who missed them and what happened, and then Dalton Nixon was 7 of 10 shooting free throws. Apparently got fouled like 8 times in his 12 minutes of play. I'm not worried about the free throws. I'm just not worried. These aren't even necessarily the right minutes, right, that people will be playing. So I'm not that concerned. Does the close score concern you? Closer than we would have thought.
No. I mean, 14 points. I mean, I can get over that.
Childs only played 24 minutes, and by the way, 25 and 14 in 24 minutes is a monster line. Okay,
I think if you look at what happened in the second half, I mean, it wasn't that Westminster came out and did something better. I'm not worried about it. I mean, they stomped all over them in the first half, and then you know moved some things around in the second half. This is not a cause for concern.
I'm not worried. Honestly, about anything. Obviously, Nick Emery, which we'll get to here in a second, only played 4 minutes. Coach Rose said he was ill, and that's why he did not play very much. But there might be some other reasons he's not going to play here in a minute. Matt, let's talk about that. So reports are now out that Emery will most certainly miss the game against Mississippi Valley State on Saturday. It doesn't look like an NCAA suspension has been issued. This seems to be more of one of those precautionary things where he might not officially be ineligible, but it's likely he'll be declared ineligible. So they're kind of doing one of those preemptive attacks. Matt, you and I were very clear about this a couple weeks ago on the show. This is dumb. Not that Rose is keeping him out. He's doing what he should do from a defensive standpoint. But this is dumb. Unless something comes out beyond what the Salt Lake Tribune has reported, this is dumb.
I understand why you would hold him out, right? But the whole concept of this is stupid.
If the benefits are what we're talking about, this is ridiculous. And, you know, we'll get to this here in a second, but Alabama is going to have a guy not probably playing against us, though it's by Thanksgiving, so, but their star freshman. This NCAA stuff is beyond ridiculous at this point, right? They've got an indictment stuff going on at a federal level, all this crazy stuff, and Emory may miss part of the season because he went to Harry Potter World.
And what's crazy about it is the NCAA was clueless. They had missed all this stuff that the FBI got into. You know, the NCAA is chasing people around for an extra pair of socks and a bagel with two packets of cream cheese. And, you know, they've got all this other stuff going on. I mean, but anyway, this is my opinion on this is well documented. Just pay the players.
Yeah, you and I share probably a minority opinion, I would say, on that, which is that there's millions upon millions of dollars floating around, and it's mainly going to coaches, administrators, and facilities, and you could give some of that to the players beyond scholarship. I get it. They're already getting paid. They get a scholarship. I'm not one of those people saying that's not worth anything, because I do think it's actually worth a substantial sum. But the fact that, you know, the fact that somebody can't take him to someplace, can't pay for something for him, is just weird, right? In college, people, you know, if a friend of our family had offered to take us to Lagoon, like, we wouldn't have to think, what will I get kicked out of the communications program if he takes me?
Yeah, it's asinine, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and even if the schools don't pay him, like, let him sign shoe deals or whatever. Or at the very least, like you're saying, like, somebody – people used to – you're a college student. You don't have any money. People used to invite me over for dinner and friends of the family and other things. But if you play on a basketball team, you got to think twice before you go over and eat fajitas at somebody's house. I mean, it's just silly.
Or somebody buys a plane ticket for you to go home to your family's funeral, to a loved one's funeral, right?
It's
that happened.
Insane.
Ty Detmer, I believe, bought a plane ticket for somebody, right?
Yeah, I don't remember.
They had to pay Ty Detmer back, if I'm remembering the story. This is, you know, 15, 20 years ago, but lots of crazy stuff. So, Matt, let's talk about the men's basketball team here for a second, and we'll start off this way with the Emory thing. So we got a question, a tweet bag question regarding Emory from Ramsey Cox. That's at Ramsey Cox on Twitter. He asks, how much impact will not having Emory on the team? How long do you think he will be out? I think it's only going to be a couple games until we hear differently. If it's only a couple games, I think the impact is, what, minimal? Zero? Close to zero? Maybe even good, because a couple of these guards will get some early playing time and Rose will get to evaluate them, and then Emory can just be plugged back in, right?
Yeah, but I mean, this NCAA stuff, I mean, there's really no good way to understand what the timetable is. And so if you're going to hold him out, you're holding him out until you have an idea what's going on.
Okay, so let's play worst case scenario here. He's out for a long period. I can't imagine he's out for the year. Okay, unless, like we've said, unless there's something else that BYU and the NCAA knows that has not yet been reported in the press, right? A bigger benefit, something else going on. So if let's think about that for a second. Let's say he misses most of the non-conference schedule or all of it. Okay, so he's out for a month and a half. What is that? What is the impact of that to the team?
Was that a month and a half?
Yeah. Is that a massive impact? Medium impact? No impact?
I'd say medium. I don't think it's massive. I think if you look at the games before you get into conference play, I don't know that he's if that's the straw that breaks the camel's back on wins and losses here.
So Matt, off the top of your head, what was Emory's rank on our team last year? Right. Obviously, Mika was number one. Okay. Right. So who if you were taking a draft, who's the next player you take off last year's team based on their performance last year?
Oh, geez. Off the top of my head, I mean, it's not Emory, though.
It's not Emory. It's what, Childs?
Yeah, probably.
Elijah Bryant? Hawes? Emory was, by advanced statistics and probably by most people was the fourth or fifth best player on the team last year, right?
Right.
Okay. So Mika leaves, but we added quite a few people back from missions, a few transfers. I think it's possible that Emery once again is the fourth best, maybe the third best player on this team. Losing him has an impact for an extended period of time. But he's not like losing, say, Childs. Or, quite frankly, maybe not like losing Elijah Bryant or Haas. Which, by the way, I find it weird that Elijah Bryant is not, preseason all WCC and TJ Haas is when Elijah Bryant had a superior season last year. I'm not quite following the press on that one. But I think he might be the third or fourth best player again. So it's not like we're losing the star, right, of this
right.
team.
Right.
So it'll be impactful and might lose a game you should have won in that stretch. But I don't think it's a massive deal. So Matt, we talked about this before. Looking at that preseason, non-conference schedule, there's some games in here that are going to be important for BYU's chances to get into the NCAA tournament. And we're going to talk about those games right now.
You ready to talk about those games? I am ready to talk about those games.
So, looking at this season, obviously Mississippi Valley State was one of the worst teams in college basketball last year. I don't anticipate. We're not going to spend a lot of time previewing them, okay? Princeton, we'll talk maybe a little bit next week, but obviously that game's coming up. The other games I'm going to highlight are Alabama, and boy, does that matter. Why can't I think of the Alabama kid's name? If What's-His-Face is playing, right? Because if one of the top 10 freshmen is playing, and then that becomes a game that if you win is a big, huge deal.
It's a good resume builder right there.
Colin Sexton, right? That's his name. Mm-hmm. That's his name. If he's not playing, that game goes from like super important to the resume to just semi important. The other game in the non-conference schedule is Utah. Okay, so those are three top 100 teams, maybe all top 75 teams, depending on how the season falls out. If you get two out of those three wins, you are on a good path already towards the tournament. Doesn't guarantee anything, but your resume is built pretty well. Outside of that, Matt, maybe UT Arlington, there's not a lot, depends on how good Utah State is too, there's not a lot of other wins here that are great resume builders, but there's certainly some losses that could hurt you.
Yes, that's a very good way to describe what we're looking at here.
I mean, you really have those three teams, Princeton, Alabama, and Utah, that today, and things can change, but today look like top 100 teams. I don't know if anybody else does. Maybe UT Arlington, they were pretty decent last year. Maybe Utah State, if they're improved substantially over last year. And then Weber's kind of they've got some talent and could be a wild card. Maybe that's a better game than it looks today on paper. But Matt, this isn't a great off-season schedule, out-of-conference schedule. You know, the average opponent for this is worse than our conference schedule, which is not good since our conference schedule isn't particularly difficult.
Isn't right.
Matt, let's talk about some of the players on this team for BYU. Obviously, Yoeli Childs is a monster. Okay, we all know that. He's poised to have a big season. Chase Blyle asked this. This adds Chase Blyle on Twitter. Is BYU basketball a Yoeli Childs injury away from being terrible? Hashtag tweetbag. By the way, I missed in his Westminster question, Andre's awesome for you, hashtag I think it's terrible. But he did do hashtag tentatively climbing back in the tweetbag, which is really good. Don't
Love
do it.
It,
Andre. Just send us tweetbag questions. You don't have to climb in. You don't. Send your questions to the tweetbag.
You are by definition. You are, by definition, climbing into the tweet bag when you participate in this process.
Okay,
that is what it is called.
Let me ask you a question. When you send a letter, do you climb into the mailbox?
Oh, that would be strange. But we're not talking about letters, are we? What is this? What is this, 1974?
1974.
We're sending letters into podcasts?
What do you know about 1974? Oops. Nothing. You know nothing. Neither do I. I wasn't born then. So, Matt, are we a Yoli Childs injury away from complete and total disaster?
Yes.
No.
Yes, we are.
No, we're not. No, we're not. No, we're
really?
Not. Childs isn't that good, and I don't mean that in a derogatory way, and I think a guard lineup could still be all right. We are a Yoli Childs injury away from not being a bubble NCAA contender, but I don't think we're Yoli Childs away from having the equivalent to the football season.
I just worry you get into this guard-centric lineup that you talk about. And then my concern is you move in this direction of you're going to live by the three or die by the three. And that makes me nervous. I feel like that could be a disaster for a team that, and granted, is against Westminster, right? But you shot 37% from the other side of the arc.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying it'd be a great season. Childs, I believe, will end up being the best player on this team and will be, you know, probably the only post option that can score a lot, right? I mean, unless one of these other post guys changes substantially from what we've seen before, you know, which is possible, but assuming that's not the case. But I don't think it's a disaster, but I think if he's off the team, I think your chances of making the NCAA tournament if he got hurt are next to zero, right? Which is we all want to get back into the NCAA tournament. We talked about this, you know, towards the end of last year. That's it, right? That's the goal, you know. But I think Yoli Childs' injury is, I don't think we like only win 12 games or something if Childs gets hurt. I don't think it's a disaster.
I guess it depends on your definition of disaster.
Yeah, sure. Or terrible, you know, in Chase's words. So Matt,
I think you're in trouble for the tournament.
Yeah, but. Yeah, for sure. So we agree on that for sure. Matt, obviously Elijah Bryant, T.J. Hawes, Nick Emery, those are the names that we're talking about as the best players on the team. What's one other player not in that group who you think will have a maybe the next biggest impact on the team after those four?
Oh, geez. So which four are you pulling off the table for me?
So I'm pulling off the table Yoli Childs,
mm-hmm.
Elijah Bryant, TJ Hawes, and Nick Emery. So who's next? Who is going to be the fifth best player on this team? Or maybe, surprise, surprise, higher than that and might eclipse one of the four gentlemen I just mentioned. Do you want me to go first?
Yeah, why don't you go first?
Good,
and then I'm just going to copy what you say.
No, you can't copy. You have to pick someone else.
Oh, I know who you're going to pick, though. Okay, go ahead.
Well, why don't you pick it then, Hotshot?
Go ahead. Let's just see if I was right. Go ahead.
Jashire Hartnett.
That's not where I thought you were going to go.
You thought I was going to go for Celius?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I think Hartnett's the next one.
All right. Well, I'll talk about Celius then, man. But let's talk about Hartnett for a minute.
I think Hartnett brings to the team. We talked about this maybe a month or so ago. He brings some skills to the squad that maybe did not exist on this team last year. I think perimeter defense is a big deal. I think being able to get into the key, penetrate, and open up some 3-point shooters is a big deal. And I think those things will make him valuable in a way that nothing against Celius, but I think we have other guys that kind of duplicate what Celius does, and he will be a valuable guy this year. But to me, it's Hartnett, and I know he's 6 feet, and I also almost always root for a guy that's the shortest on the squad.
Yeah, and he hails from Gulfport, Mississippi. Great town. I've been there.
You have?
Oh, sure.
Of course you have.
Actually, I'm looking at running a race there. But
of course you are. Where haven't you run a race?
But, yeah, I mean, that's not a terrible pick. I mean, and you can go with,
not.
You know, the
it's
new
the
guy
right pick.
And say, you know, I think this new guy is going to step in and do anything. But I think that if I have to base my decision here on somebody that I actually have real information on, yeah, I think you got to go with Celius.
Celius, not a bad pick. I thought you were going to go with Luke Worthington. I'm just kidding. I didn't think you were going to go with Worthington. But yeah, I'm interested in, because of all the pressure, we talked about this before with Mika being gone, I think this could be a year where the team surprises us. Now, do I think they end up winning, you know, like winning the WCC and beating St. Mary's and Gonzaga 3 out of 4 times in the regular season? No. But I think they could be better than last year.
I think they may be. It sounds to me, if you believe the reports coming out of Provo, right, that there's a different chemistry with this squad. And I don't know I don't believe that that's a commentary on anything negative about the way the team was getting along or any of this stuff behind the scenes. I think we're talking about on the court complementing each other's skill sets and being able to take advantage of what players are good at. And if that's really true, and it seems like it may be, this absolutely could be a team that performs better than they did a year ago, even after losing Mika.
Yeah, and that's, you know, basketball is weird that way, right? I mean, sometimes flow is more important than the actual, you know, talent on the team. Give me talent every time, right? I'm not an idiot. Well, I guess that doesn't prove that. But my point is, this is, you know, this could be a better team. Now, it also could not, because Mika was really good, right? But if they, based on preseason projections, they win 23 regular season games. I don't think that's likely. I think that's probably more like 21 or 22 is more of the upside on this team. And like we said before, that changes if Childs or maybe Bryant miss significant time. That changes. Well, Matt, let's talk football. Fresno State. Okay? Justin Sweeney.
Oh, geez.
At Justin D. Sweeney.
Sweeney.
He has a philosophical parenting question for us, Matt.
Listen, are we really the right people to be dishing out parenting advice?
Absolutely.
Is this wise?
Between the two of us, we have 9 children.
All right, here we go.
9 children, and it's fairly evenly split between genders. We range from your oldest is how old? 12?
12.
12 to 1 year old. I mean, I'd say between the two of us, we're very well qualified for this.
Very oh, okay. Qualified.
Oh, yeah.
Let's do it.
Yeah, we should do a parenting book, you and I. Should write one.
Yeah.
Giving advice to fathers about how to raise children. No, we shouldn't. So, Justin says this. My 5-year-old, who I also took to the U of U game in Provo, started cheering for Fresno State. They do live in that area. On Saturday, what should I do? It's easy, Justin. You remove all of his privileges till he repents of his evil doing. No television. Food should be plain. Nutritious, but not full of taste.
Don't, Matt. Don't cut the crust off his PB&J.
That's right. Eat that crust, child, and like it. He's 5. I just roll with it. I don't think he'd do anything, right?
No, I'd only be worried if he started, if he started cheering for the U, that'd be different.
Oh, no, that's
you know, that's a different thing here. But this is harmless. This is Fresno State, and they were winning, right? I mean,
yeah, he's five. Now, if you're telling me about a 10 or 11 year old, we'd be talking about something completely different. That's when, you know, you really got to start questioning what you're doing as a parent.
No, really though, like my kids can cheer for whoever they want.
No, my kids can't. Are you serious? Your kids could cheer for the University of Utah.
Yep.
I'm really disappointed in you. We are not writing that book together. We clearly have differing parent philosophies. We don't live in Utah. Why would my kids cheer for the University of Utah? They want to become University of Minnesota fans? Rock on. But University of Utah fans, then they're just doing that to annoy me. And that's a problem.
No, what if they decided they were Michigan fans?
Yeah, I don't like it, but I can roll with it.
Okay, so I just want to kind of test the boundaries here. Let's see where San Diego State.
Again, why the heck would you be a San Diego State fan? That just shows a lack of intelligence.
True. That's true. Nobody's going to be San Diego. Okay, that was a bad example. Yeah. Cal.
That just turns my stomach. Do they care about...
Are you cool with it? Hey, Dad, I really want that Cal football sweatshirt for Christmas.
Oh, well, there's no chance of that. That's just not happening. That's a different question. Them rooting for them and looking it up online and saying, oh, the Bears did well today, that would turn my stomach, but I'll roll with that. Getting them a sweatshirt that said Stanford hat.
This Stanford hat is pretty sweet. That's great. And it's a good school, Dad. I might want to go there someday.
And then I'd burn it in front of them. I'm just kidding. I wouldn't do that before anybody calls Child Protective Services, all right? But anyway.
He would totally excuse him from the room before he burned it.
Okay, so Matt, Fresno State was maybe one of the better performances of the year for the BYU football team. But obviously we're grading on a massive curve here. What is there to say anymore, Matt? Offense is terrible. This was true even before. I know people are going to be like, oh, Mangum looked pretty good. Not great. He didn't look great before he got hurt. And by the way, I feel terrible for Mangum. I think he was working hard. I think he was trying to do all the right things. This was obviously just not his year.
Yeah, I mean, he's a good kid. I think he's a talented football player.
He's got a great last name.
Really solid last name. But this just 2017 has just come off the rails, really.
Yeah, was not his year. Matt, the other part, the big takeaway for me from this game is I think Squally Canada. I think he's the best back on the roster, and that would include Doolittle.
Yeah, we came off of Squally Canada way too early on.
Well, and he got hurt too, so. I mean, there was a combination of things, but I don't know what happened, but he was doing this jump cut thing that was just, what a running back should be doing. So I don't know if Reno got with him because, it's a move that Mahe did quite a bit when he was in BYU Blue as a player. So, I'm hopeful that the running game could take a step forward here in a little bit. Matt, let's talk about UNLV. Preview this game a little bit. Friday night's contest with the Rebels, the Runnin' Rebels. So, Matt, Sweeney has another tweetbag question for us.
Sweeney!
Have we ever been underdogs to UNLV before? That's part one of his question. Part two is, how low do we have to fall before changes are made? Hashtag tweetbag. We'll get to the second part of your question, Justin, here in a minute. I don't know how to totally research that. I would be shocked if in football we have ever been underdogs to UNLV before.
Yeah, I'd be very surprised.
So this is not good. This is bad. This is not like Fresno State where you go, well, they're having a great year, you know? No. UNLV, despite the win against Fresno State, is not good.
This is bad. This is a bad sign, everybody.
So Gary Payne, that's at Fast Break GP, said, Hoops, yes, please let's talk about Hoops. Okay, well, only after you have analyzed the QB situation, who will it be? Hashtag Paynebag, hashtag Tweetbag. Well, Gary, obviously we've already talked about Hoops. We did that first. So the QB situation is weird. Mangum obviously is out. Hodge did not look healthy to me. I don't know if the injury happened during the game, but he hobbled quite a bit. Did not seem... The one time he got his number called on a run did not seem as quick and nimble as he had been earlier in the year. And then Satake really threw things for a wrench yesterday in his press conference by basically saying there's a three-way competition and a short week to see who will start on Friday night. So
yeah,
Matt,
that's not a good sign, everybody.
Let me ask you this, okay? I took a poll question on this. And I'll ask you the exact same question. How surprised would you be if someone besides Hodge starts Friday night? The three options I gave in the poll on Twitter were very surprised, a little surprised, or not surprised. Where do you fall in that camp?
I'd be a little surprised only because I'm not sure where he is from a health standpoint. If he's healthy enough to go, he's got to be the guy.
I agree with you completely. If he's healthy enough to go, I think he will be the guy. But if he's not, if he can't run the read option, okay, and that part of his game is removed, despite the fact that I think he has a big arm, I think it's probably Critchlow. But the fact that he didn't just say Critchlow or Hodge, that they threw Wilstead in there, has me just pausing a minute as to whether they believe in practice or other his limited gameplay, whether Critchlow has earned that or not. I don't know, man. To be honest,
but if I were Satake, I'd play it this way too, right? I mean, you got a short week. Nobody knows who your quarterback's going to be. Just make it as murky as possible.
Maybe. But I don't know if that's what he's doing, dude. I don't. The other part is this. How about this question? He said, and Detmer then said it again today, we're going to pick the quarterback who gives us the best chance to win on Friday night, which to me is coach speak for if Hodge isn't healthy enough, we're going to pick somebody else. Okay? I think that's what he's saying without saying
that. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Assuming that's true, Matt, what should they be picking the quarterback on? Should they be picking the quarterback on based on winning Friday night, or should they be picking a quarterback based on developing a quarterback for 2018?
Listen, you're not developing a quarterback for 2018 in November right now. You're just not. That's not. I know we talk about it this way, but I just don't believe that that's how it works. You put the quarterback in this game Friday night who gives you the greatest chance of winning the game. The reps he gets, the experience he gets against UNLV, the second weekend in November, is not going to help in 2018.
Well,
I just don't buy that.
I don't know if I agree that it won't help. I do think the offense will not be the same next year.
Right.
Either because Detmer gets fired or because he is asked and forced to completely retool his offense in the offseason. Right. So either way. Which, by the way, on Twitter, Matt, I am seeing this crazy narrative of people saying Detmer's, and now it's been fueled by Max Hall, which all due respect to Max Hall. This narrative that Detmer's offense is fine, it's the players, is insane. It's insane, guys, based on the stats. Are you telling me that we have, talent-wise, the 120th best talented offense in the country? Because that's what you're saying.
Right. You can't defend that. That doesn't even make sense.
It defies all logic that, well, he just doesn't have his players or he doesn't whatever. Whatever the explanation is, Detmer's offense is terrible. It's maybe the players too. I'm not saying it's all coaching. But to lay it all on the players and say if he just had the right players, this offense would hum. Yeah, great. If he had Alabama's players, he'd probably be scoring more points. Oh, good. Great. That's very helpful for us because we're never going to have a roster that talented. So anyway, Matt, back to UNLV. I agree with you. I think you just play to win this game. I disagree with you, though. I think whoever plays in this game and gets reps, I think they're reps and they're valuable to the development of that quarterback just because game reps are not something you can do in practice. So I think it's valuable, but I don't know that it's as valuable as people seem to think it is, you know.
Right.
Especially against this defense, which is as terrible as our offense is how terrible this defense is. So, of UNLV's. So anyway, Matt, their offense. Let's talk about UNLV's offense. They have probably the second or third best rushing offense we've seen all year. And according to Football Outsiders, they have a top 50 offense. So this is a decent offense. They run the ball, not exclusively, but a ton, including their quarterback, Armani Rogers, who's averaging 7.5 yards per carry. So this is your greatest nightmare, because I know how much you fear mobile quarterbacks.
I'm not personally afraid of mobile quarterbacks. Yeah, I fear for our defense when we play a mobile
quarterback. You flinched while you were running the marathon because you thought you saw a mobile quarterback coming out of the crowd.
There were a lot of mobile quarterbacks on the course. I'm not going to lie to you.
I have no doubt. So obviously Rodgers is the player to watch. They also have a couple of really talented I don't really talented might be overstatement, but some good running backs as well. Defense, Matt, a different story. According to Football Outsiders, they're the 108th best offense, defense, I mean, 111 against the rush and 98th against the pass. So they like to suck against both. And they do. So, and they're 129th in sack rate. So if Hodge does play, he's probably not going to get a ton of pressure. I look at that, Matt, and I go, this is a good game to have a freshman starting, if there is such a thing. Because this defense is not going to give tons of trouble. I think this will be way more similar to what we had against San Jose State. And I think we can put up 400-500 yards of total offense, which is not breaking any records, but for this year, that's pretty good.
Well, you know, but this is a team that's given up big points in every matchup this year.
Well, you know, if we're gonna define big points. You know,
lowest total they've held anybody to is 26.
I know. It's crazy. It's crazy. They gave up.
They've got 5 of their games. They gave up more than 40 points.
Yeah. Well, no, their lowest is 16, right, to Idaho and Fresno.
I'm sorry. 6 of their games, they gave up more than 40 points.
6 of their games, they gave up more than 40 points. And we saw Fresno's offense last week where they held Fresno. Now they're on a 2-game win streak, Fresno and Hawaii. Now, the Fresno game is a little inexplicable to me, right? But let's be clear. They gave up 52 points to Utah State. We played Utah State. That is not a, like, firing on all cylinders offense, right?
And yeah, there's no excuse for 52 points there.
Apparently giving up 54 points to Ohio State actually isn't that good. Because it turns out Ohio State isn't very good.
Yikes.
You know, so anyway, and they gave up 34 points to Air Force that just got absolutely demolished by Army. Which, by the way, Army did not throw a freaking pass the entire game.
Yeah, how do you win a game without throwing a pass?
Because you run the ball really, really well. That's how you do it. And you played really good defense. So, that game. So, anyway. But, Matt, if Hodge is not able to go, which I kind of think he's not, all right, then I think Critchlow or Willsted will have a good game. Not a great game, but a good game. And I think we pound the rock to, if Hall's back and healthy and Canada get a bunch of carries, I bet you we run the ball 50 times against UNLV. So, anyway. Matt, right now Vegas has UNLV, I think, by 4. Which basically says they think the teams are about even, right? Because 3.5 points is for home field advantage.
That's what you get on the home field, right?
Over-under is 52 points. But let's start with UNLV by 4. Are you taking UNLV or BYU in that scenario?
Taking UNLV.
Come on, you're crazy. It's BYU. BYU's winning this game. We'll get to that in a second. Predictions. But I'm taking BYU there. Matt, over-under on the 52 points total for both teams.
I'm taking the under on 52 points.
I'm taking the over on 52 points, but just barely.
Look at you go.
Just barely. We'll get to the why in a second. Total yards by each team. Let's do over-under BYU 450.
Total yards 450?
Yeah.
I'm going under.
I'm going to take the over. Over under UNLV total yards at, let's see here. Where's their team stats? 400 yards for the UNLV offense. Over under.
Under.
I am also going to go under. I think people are probably getting the picture of what I think is going to happen in this particular game. Why am I talking in weird voices today? I really am. Like, I keep slipping into these weird voices. I don't know what's going on.
I don't understand it.
UNLV is averaging 424 yards per game, by the way. BYU is obviously not averaging that much, or particularly close to that. Matt, rushing yards for Canada, and we're going to assume KJ Hall is at least limited, okay? Over under 105 yards for Squally Canada.
I'll give him the over.
Okay. I will also take the over. Over under 5.5 receptions for Bushman.
Under.
I'm going to take the over. I think if there is, because I am again assuming that it's a freshman starting quarterback, I think your safety blanket gets a bunch of receptions. Matt, can I say something about our special teams before we give our final prediction?
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
We're terrible at special teams, except for punting. We're terrible. Our kick return game is terrible. We're not very good at preventing kick returns. Our punt return game is terrible. We're only okay at preventing punt returns, despite very good punting from Linehan. Matt, we're going to get to this in a second, but I'm worried about more than Ty Detmer. I'm worried about more than Ty Detmer. And if we end up losing this game, I bet you that special teams play into it if we lose. So, Matt, final prediction for you. You obviously hate the Cougars and think the Rebels are going to win.
Yes, I do. I think this is a UNLV win, 28-21.
Did you just say you hate the Cougars?
Oh, my gosh. You walked me into it.
I said you hate the Cougars, and you said yes. I didn't walk in anything. Man.
I lost focus there for a minute. I don't hate the Cougars, but I think we're coming home from Las Vegas with a loss.
You always win when you go to Vegas.
That's not true. People lose in Vegas all the time. That's how the whole thing is set up.
You know, we are 16-3 all time. We have never lost to Las Vegas to UNLV in Las Vegas.
Oh, records are made to be broken.
Isn't that kind of crazy? The last time
UNLV... It's got to feel like a real exercise in futility, huh, if you're UNLV.
The last time UNLV beat us was 2004, during the last dark ages of BYU football. So maybe you're right. So what was your predicted score?
28-21.
28-21. You are wrong. It's going to be 33-20 BYU. Their strength is going to run into our strength, and I think they're going to have trouble moving the ball. I think they'll do just about as well as Fresno State did, and I think we will do much better than we did against Fresno State because Fresno State had a good defense. So I think this is BYU's game to win, and I think BYU needs to win this game and should based on talent and everything else. Now, I understand why people may think I'm crazy to predict them to win based on the results of this season, but I'm going to roll with it. I'm going to roll with it.
Hey, good luck with that. You're welcome to do whatever you'd like there.
So, Matt, we've got a couple minutes left here. So let's go to something that Jeff Johnston on Twitter, who's a listener of the podcast, sometimes gets in the tweet bag. Is he famous among BYU Twitter first?
Gee, awful. I don't know.
I'd say he's famous in my timeline. So here's what he says, okay? This was a string, he said, and I'm not going to read all of it. I'm going to paraphrase some of it. It was 8 tweets, right? Which is, by the way, I think it's ridiculous that people are hating on the 280-character thing, right? Because people were doing this, you know, crazy long string thing already. Like, everybody chill out. The world will continue with 280.
For the record, characters. I prefer to write a note on your phone and take a screenshot and tweet that.
Either way, I don't care. I don't care. It's a little easier to read the way you're talking about. So anyway, this is what Jeff says. When a steady program like BYU drives into a ditch like BYU has this season, the problems go much deeper than play calls. Agree or disagree?
Agree.
Agree. All right. Next premise. You have to start looking into schemes, culture implemented by the new coaching staff. Something is very broken. Agree or disagree?
I agree on schemes. I don't know that we have enough information to comment on culture.
I think it's getting close to maybe we do, but I'll go with you on that one. Next one. How much time will BYU decision makers give this staff to turn things around? Will they give it another year? Matt, will they give it another year?
I don't think so.
I think Kalani gets another year. I don't think a lot of the staff does. And then that's exactly what Jeff says in the next one. He thinks Kalani will get another year.
Yeah, I think Kalani has another season, but this staff is not going to come through this offseason unscathed.
Yes. It would be disappointing and shocking if they did. Okay. But whatever Kalani and the staff did this offseason didn't work. Team has seemed ill-prepared and overwhelmed all season to me. Agree or disagree?
Agree.
I also agree. I thought Portland State was terrible, and I remember people absolutely hammering me on Twitter about who cares. It was basically an exhibition game. It was not an exhibition game. It counted, and we looked like crap. And we've continued to look like crap, the offense has, the rest of the entire season. Except with, you know, five quarters or six quarters being an exception to that, where maybe we looked mediocre. Okay. Kalani does some things better than Bronco, Jeff writes, like connecting with and inspiring fans and alumni, but staff hasn't gotten the most out of players. Agree or disagree?
I agree with that.
I agree with that wholeheartedly. My guess is BYU bosses will stay the course and hope this staff learns painful lessons this year and does things better going forward. Do you agree with Jeff that he thinks BYU bosses will stay the course?
I disagree. I think some people are going to be are not coming back.
I agree with you, but I think it's not going to be as much change as a lot of us were thinking. He says, the last part, if there needs to be changes in discipline, work ethic, and culture, I sure hope this staff is starting those changes now. It can't wait. Agree or disagree?
I agree with that.
It sure as hell better be happening now, right?
I mean it
better.
I've seen comments out of players and stuff that make me wonder about pockets of the team with discipline and work ethic, which I guess is all part of culture. You know, coming back to my comment earlier about I don't know if we have enough information to say we have a culture problem yet.
Yeah.
But I think there need to be some changes there. I believe that they are making some of those. When you get to a point like this in a season, there's really only so much you can do. I think that the whole environment changes at this point. And then if you know that there's stuff going on in the off season and all these things, I mean, this is just a bad spot to be in. It's a really bad spot to be in.
I think Jeff's basic premise, though I disagree on some of the details, but I think his premise is accurate, is that when you're 2-8, it is not just about play calling. It is not just about one or two things. It's not just about injuries, right? Even though injuries, we talked about this, have been a significant factor this year. But what games do you think if we had had a fuller, better team, how many more wins do we have?
Well, there were only. This looked like such a slop fest. I don't know.
But how many games were close? Right? Utah, I guess in theory we were close. Utah State, I think that's the one that's clear. If Hodge doesn't get hurt, I think I'm fairly comfortable stating we probably win that game. Certainly not a definite, but we probably win that game. So you're talking about maybe 3 or 4 wins, and you're sitting at best case scenario 4-6. Does that feel a lot better?
Nope.
Feels better, but it doesn't feel a lot better, right?
No, it doesn't feel a lot better. It maybe feels a little bit better, but you're talking about, you know, you're talking about turning around the Utah State game and maybe one other game, but I don't even know what other game you would pick. Take some of those injuries out, do you beat East Carolina?
We got handled by East Carolina.
Yeah.
I'm with you. I
think you plug one or two players back into that game and win it.
No, I agree with you. I don't think you do. And I'm not trying to say injuries haven't been a significant factor, and sometimes it's hard with the cascading effect of those things to really know what the impact is or not, right? And we'll never know exactly what it would have been like if you had, you know, run some theoretical where you put some of those players back in. But Jeff's premise is right in that this is more than that. And if there's a work ethic issue, that is a big problem, right? You and I know, because we've known enough college athletes or been close around it, to know that not everybody's has the same motivation. Okay? Some players end up, and I know people don't like to hear this, and every time I say it, we end up getting responses to it. There are players on this team who are only on the team because they happen to just be good at football, and they really don't care that much. Now, that's not most of the players. I think most of the players love football and care about it a lot. But you've got enough on that team that don't really care that much, that if you don't have a culture of working hard, it's easy for them to drag other people down. I've known people that played for BYU that to this day don't watch a single football game post-college. They didn't watch football growing up, right? And I know for most of us that are crazy football fans, that's weird, right? Like, why would you play football if you didn't love it? Because they just happen to be phenomenal athletes. They got into it at some point in their life. And by the way, they're just really good at it, right? And if you don't have a culture of working hard at any level of sport, that can be a big problem. And I'm not saying that exists here or not, but if work ethic is an issue, that is something that can be fixed, and it has to be fixed. Otherwise, this will be you will be in the same. Even if you've got a better scheme next year, your players won't be in good enough shape, and they won't have thought enough about what they're supposed to do the right thing when it comes. What do you think of that?
No, I am absolutely with you on that.
So, you know, but anyway, if you think everybody on this roster loves football the way most of us as diehard fans love football, I just hate to burst your bubble. It's just not true.
No, that's just not how the world, it's not how life works.
Not how life works. It'd be great if everybody on the team cared the same as say, you know, I don't know, pick Max Hall, right? And somebody like that. That's why I think sometimes a player like Max Hall has a hard time separating, you know, scheme and players, because I think he believes he could run any scheme and have great success.
Right. Which is why, but that type of moxie is what made him great,
yeah,
right?
It's one of the best. Parts
he can make
him.
Any throw, he can get it right, in right. any window, and all
yeah,
of
yeah.
that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I'd you know, I'd love to have Max Hall or his equivalent back on us. So Matt, college football playoff. We did not talk about this last week because we ran out of time. Let's talk about it now. Okay, 2 weeks ago when we last predicted the college football playoff. It was a whole different world, man. A whole different world. Since then, Penn State has lost twice. Since then, Ohio State has fallen out of the picture. Since then, Wisconsin has gone from everybody thought they could make it to, their schedule stinks. So, Matt, let's look at this. The top five did not change from last week. For the college football playoff rankings, it's Georgia, Alabama, Notre Dame, Clemson, Oklahoma, with TCU, Miami, and Wisconsin the next three. Who's your teams, man? And I won't remind everybody how big you were on the Penn State bandwagon, because that just doesn't feel good to say it.
Thanks. I appreciate that. Yeah, so is the question we're answering right here, like, who do I think is going to the playoff?
Not who not whether the committee got it right. Because right now, they're saying, basically, that Georgia, Alabama, Notre Dame, and Clemson, if you started the football playoff today, those are the four teams, right? Because their resumes, they're just purely judging them on the resume. You and I, we're trying to predict who actually gets to those two games on New Year's.
Okay.
So last time you had Bama, Penn State, TCU, and Miami is who you had in there. I'm assuming you're keeping Bama.
I'm doing a total overhaul.
But you're keeping Bama?
Nope.
No! Total overhaul, and Alabama's not in it?
I'm dropping the Tide.
Oh! All right, let's hear it. Let's start over.
So I've got Georgia.
All right. Georgia, I've heard of them.
Georgia. TCU.
TCU. You had them
Miami,
last time. That's not a total
and Wisconsin.
Overall. That's not a total overhaul. You had two of those teams last time.
Yeah, whatever. Dropping Bama is a big deal, baby.
Dropping Bama is a big deal. I like it. I like your boldness. Georgia, TCU, Miami, and Wisconsin. So let's walk through your scenario then. Then you think Georgia beats Alabama, runs the table, beats Alabama in the SEC championship game.
Correct.
Okay. Does Alabama lose any more games in your scenario?
Nope.
All right. So you think a one-loss Alabama does not beat out a Wisconsin?
I think that you have to look at the conference championship game as like a play-in game to the playoff. They had their shot. They lost to Georgia. Georgia's in. Somebody else has to get a shot at Georgia. You don't make Georgia beat Bama twice.
Okay. All right. Fair. All right. So Miami, okay, let's start it with Miami. They've got Notre Dame left, so that's obviously you're picking one or the other, right? Notre Dame or Miami. In your case, you're picking Miami. They beat UVA, they beat Pitt, and then they beat Clemson in the ACC championship game?
That's what I've got.
All right. Interesting.
I've been high on Clemson all year.
You have been high on Clemson. Like, now you're jumping off the bandwagon, and I'm not exactly even sure why. And then Wisconsin, obviously Wisconsin's path, they got to beat Iowa, who looks pretty good. Michigan's kind of a dumpster fire right now, so I'm not sure that's going to be as that hard, but you don't know. And then they finish up at Minnesota, which is not a particularly tough game. Now, who they play has yet to be determined, right? It could be Penn State. It could be, I think, Ohio State. So Matt, who are they going to play? Does Ohio State or Penn State make it to that game?
That's not what I just.
You don't care at that point. All right,
but I don't know, right? I mean, it's the parity there is pretty good.
Yeah, for sure. All right.
But I think Ohio State. I mean, you talked before. Ohio State's not who we thought they were, and neither is Penn State.
No, neither of those teams are. So, all right. So, and then obviously TCU. But with TCU, that's weird. The whole stupid. This could be the year, quite frankly, where them having that conference championship game ends up keeping them out of the playoff.
Isn't that just awesome?
Because run through this scenario for a second, okay?
It's hilarious.
Let's say TCU beats Oklahoma, okay? And then TCU gets beat by Oklahoma State or Oklahoma in the championship game. Then everybody's two losses, none of those teams get in.
Oh, it's stupid, right?
Right? Like, you would not, in your scenario, let's say Wisconsin loses. Okay, and you've got one loss Alabama or one loss Notre Dame, but you're saying Notre Dame loses to Miami. But regardless, you're putting in a one loss Alabama, even though they had a shot over a two loss Big 12 champ, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so a two loss Oklahoma or a two loss Oklahoma State doesn't get the nod over a one loss Alabama, right?
Correct. Right, I'm with you there.
Right, so, man. This is I kind of hope that happens, but that's not what I'm predicting. I'm predicting TCU, Bama, Wisconsin, and Clemson. That's my Final Four, which is I had Bama, Wisconsin, TCU, and Georgia. I don't think there's going to be two SEC teams. I think you're right. I think the winner gets in unless something weird happens and basically everybody else who could get in all have two losses. Then it could be Georgia and Alabama both in the both in the Final Four, but we'll see. We shall see. I will tell you what, though, it's a crazy year for college football. It's an absolutely crazy year, and I mean that in like a good way. It's been a lot of fun. I watched a lot of games this past weekend, and I plan on watching some more. I know you did not because you were preparing for a marathon or something. But some of us were not, and so we just sat on our butts. Right?
Yeah. I did some sitting around too, because you gotta rest up.
I wouldn't know anything about that. I guess that's probably
then
true.
I'll just tell you gotta rest up. It's kind of exhausting.
Which by the way, Ohio State, Michigan State, big game this weekend. Georgia and Auburn. That will paint a big picture on the playoff. Right? Georgia would have dropped that road game.
Big deal.
And obviously Wisconsin, this might be their toughest game left at home against Iowa. So there's a lot going on here that could affect. Notice none of us were talking about the Pac-12.
Nope. Where is the Pac-12? Where are you guys? I can't find you.
I don't know. I don't know what they're doing. Matt, did Central Florida get screwed in the rankings? Should they be higher than, where are they at?
Well, they're at 18?
Yeah.
No.
I think they did. I think they should be 10th.
Who have they played?
Well, let's look at their schedule here for a second.
They haven't played anybody.
They beat Maryland. They're a Power 5 team. They beat Memphis, who's pretty good. Cincinnati, East Carolina, I've heard they're all right. Navy, Peabody. What is that? No, that's not Peabody. That's Austin. and SMU. Okay, they haven't played anybody. But still, I like it on the
They got
team.
A team on their they got a team on their schedule that they put 73 points on.
Yeah, that's impressive.
Come on, win
big.
Whatever.
If you're gonna win big, I think they got to go over. At this point, they got to go over Penn State and Ohio State.
Penn State and Ohio State would both beat UCF.
That's fair.
All right. They're not stopping that running back out of Penn State.
Well, at least they are probably Memphis is pretty good. They're 8-1. So, and by the transitive property, didn't Memphis beat somebody good?
I'd have to look and see. Let me see. What do we got for Memphis?
No, Memphis didn't. No, UCLA, who turns out to be terrible. But yeah. Everyone thought was
so
good at the
they
time.
Still haven't. So yeah, so they still haven't beat anybody who was
no,
any
but
good.
UCLA was thought of as good at the time. Nobody knew they'd be 4-5.
Come on.
Hey,
come on, you're really reaching here.
Yeah, I'm totally reaching. Anyway.
They don't have a single ranked opponent on their schedule.
Yeah, stop it. Neither does Wisconsin. So Matt, let's talk about
That's
Friday
not even
night.
True. That's not even true. What no, you just said isn't no, even
it's
true.
Not, it's not even true. No, they do have Memphis doesn't, but UCF has a ranked has Memphis.
I believe ranked at the time they played them.
No. Forget about the time they played them. They Memphis is ranked in the college football playoff rankings. Right, so UCF beat them. They have one ranked team, and Wisconsin's the same way.
Okay, so yeah, Memphis is 22nd.
But that's it's not fair, right? It's not. I'm creating controversy here, Matt. Friday night, are we going to do a halftime show, or are you going to fall asleep by halftime?
I don't know. I'd probably be rested up by then. I might be in for a little halftime show.
Let's plan on it. A halftime show. I've heard from at least two people that they missed it, so I feel like we need to do it.
All right, let's bring it back. Halftime show is on then.
Yeah. We've got at least two people that missed it, and that's important. And it'll be like, you know, 2 a.m. or whatever when that game ends. So
it's gonna be great.
It's gonna be great. Well, Matt, it's good to have you back from New York. Marathon in your rearview mirror, you know, the future's so bright you gotta wear shades. I don't know what I'm even saying anymore.
It was a great time. I really enjoyed it. Appreciate the support from the podcast listeners. I guess we'll stop talking about it, at least on the podcast for now.
And you beat Tiki Barber. That's all that really counts. Well, thanks everybody for downloading and listening. We appreciate you doing that. Next week we will be back. And then in 2 weeks, Matt, the week of Thanksgiving, we're going to do our 7th anniversary extravaganza.
It's going to be amazing because 7's a lucky number.
7 is a lucky number, so stay tuned for that. We'll have been on the air at that point for 7 years and like 304 episodes, which is kind of amazing. Which, by the way, Andre Hutchins, you stink. He got the podcast of the week for his movie podcast. What's that called? The Directors or something? I don't know. I'm still bitter. Where's our podcast of the week? We've been doing it for like 7 years. He's been doing it for like a month. Backseat Directors, by the way. It's actually a really good podcast. So that's at the BD podcast. But where's our podcast of the week award?
Every week, baby.
Podbean? Talking to you, Podbean. Where's our pod? That's right. Every week. There you go. That's a better attitude. Well, thanks everybody for downloading and listening. If you feel so inclined, go to iTunes, give us a rating, tell us how awesome we are. If you don't think we're awesome, we'll just stop listening and don't leave a rating. So anyway, we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars.